The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today on Happy Sad Confused, Oscar Isaac on Triple Frontier, Star Wars, X-Men, and Dune. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. So thrilled to bring you first-time guest on Happy, Sad, Confused today, Mr. Oscar Isaac. Oscar has been on the must-get list for quite a while. I frankly thought it would happen sooner because he's a New Yorker, so you figure he's around. I've done a bunch with him on camera. He's a chill guy. But part of the problem is he's so freaking busy lately, the last few years. He's actually not been in town much, but finally the stars aligned. We found some time. He came by and we chatted about, I mean, you just heard me, you know, tease it all about four of my favorite different things. What did I say? Star Wars, X-Men, Dune. These are like all the good things in the universe. He's a part of them all. He's killing it. Oscar Isaac, one of my favorite actors working today, is the guest on today's Happy, Sad, Confused. I should say, frequent podcast regular Sammy, you know her and love her from the intro. She hasn't been on in a while. Just our schedules have not aligned for a while. We're working at different places. It's just craziness. She wanted to convey to the Happy, Sad, Confused listenership how devastated she is not to be here for this one, because as I was walking over here to do the intro today, I let her know that Oscar was the guest, and she basically had a full-on breakdown because, unbeknownst to me, she, like many of you, is in a full-on Oscar Isaac obsessive state. And I get it. He's charming. He's talented. He sings. He's got it all. He's got a good beard. I mean, come on. What more can you ask for in a human being than Oscar Isaac? So sorry, Sammy, that you weren't in his presence. And hopefully the next 45 minutes of conversation will soften the blow of not being around him. But this was a fantastic conversation. So his new film, for those that don't know, is this really strong ensemble piece called Triple Frontier. It's from J.C. Chandor, who did Margin Call, All Is Lost, and A Most Violent Year, which was his previous collaboration with Oscar. A really underrated movie, by the way. Maybe not underrated, just a little seen. It got great reviews, but just it didn't get the box office it deserved. Check that one out. This one stars Oscar, Pedro Pascal, Ben Affleck, Charlie Hunnam, and Garrett Hedlund. There's a fair amount of testosterone for you, right? It's an intense kind of a thriller action movie about five guys, all kind of friends, colleagues through the years, who are kind of chewed up and spit out by the system. They've all worked in the military, and they kind of agree to take down a drug kingpin to basically get some money in their lives and change their lives, and it all goes to hell. That's not a spoiler. You can guess where it goes. But you actually can't guess all the twists and turns this one takes. It's a really compelling film, and I highly recommend it. And it's on Netflix, so it's in your home. It's on your TV. It is waiting for you right now. Check it out, Triple Frontier. But as I said, we cover a lot of ground in this conversation. Oscar, you know, for a little background, was born in Guatemala, raised in Miami, came through New York to the infamous Juilliard School, like maybe the most prestigious acting school in the States. Got to know another one of my favorites, Jessica Chastain, here. Did a lot of theater, and then, you know, did a bunch of cool films, and then exploded thanks to being cast in the lead in Inside Llewyn Davis, that classic Coen Brothers movie. And since then, so many huge opportunities for him. Of course, he stars in the Star Wars films as Poe Dameron. Yes, we talk about Episode 9 a bit in this. He starred as Apocalypse in X-Men Apocalypse. We talk a lot about that and why that role was so meaningful for him and why it was also kind of took a toll on him. And we talk about his upcoming stint with Denis Villeneuve in a film I've talked about a lot on this podcast, his upcoming reimagining, reinterpretation of Dune. And I could not be more excited about that one. That's, of course, Timothée Chalamet and Josh Brolin and Javier Bardem and Rebecca Ferguson and Oscar Isaac. So, yes, we tease a little bit about what's to come in Dune. So, oh, and I should mention, I know a lot of people got really excited about Oscar talking about Metal Gear Solid. We talk quite a fair bit about that in this conversation too. So something for everyone in this chat. I hope you guys enjoyed as much as I did. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to Happy, Sad, Confused. Spread the good word. There is a lot of good things afoot, a lot of good things happening on the podcast and in my MTV and Comedy Central shenanigans. Just did a really cool, extensive sit-down interview for MTV with Jordan Peele, the director of Us and Get Out. That's going to be online very soon. I will, of course, send that out on my social media, Joshua Horowitz. Yeah, some really cool stuff and some events out of town coming up. There's Star Wars Celebration around the corner. There's CinemaCon, which is always a lot of fun in Las Vegas. So yeah, they're keeping me busy here, but all in a good way and all hopefully for your amusement and enjoyment. So that's about it. I hope you guys enjoyed this chat with Oscar Isaac. Here it is. Mr. Oscar Isaac has invaded my space. Welcome, sir.
Hello.
It's good to see you, man.
Thanks, man. Good to see you, too.
It's been too long. I was feeling slighted because you are local and you do work a lot, but I guess that's the problem. You're working a lot. Like, yes. You probably actually aren't here that much anymore.
I'm not. I mean, this is the first time I've been here for this long. Yeah, I've been home for, since January.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you're living an actual human
being life. A real human man.
How's that treating you? Do you need to go out and do work? You're like, I'm not equipped to be a human man. I need to just be on a set.
No, it's been fantastic. It's been great. Yeah, it's been really great. And I, taking a lot of the year off, I'll be traveling to Arrakis soon. But until then, I just get to be home.
We were just geeking out before the mic started about Dune, which I couldn't be more excited about. You see the poster I have in here. It made an impact on me as a kid. We'll get to that in a bit. There's a lot to talk about. Triple Frontier, it's a new film. I really enjoyed this one. I'm a big fan of J.C. Chandor, who obviously you've worked with before on the brilliant yet not, I think probably not enough people ever saw it, Most Violent Year. Yeah. Go back and check it out. It's probably on Netflix too.
Possibly, yeah.
So let's start with Triple Frontier. This is a hell of a cast. This is one of those scripts that's been like around. Like I remember following this one. Like every actor worth his salt wanted in on this one. When you finally read the script for this,
and I beat them all.
I was going, well, that's how it works. It's a fight club of actors.
Yeah, not exactly. I was like eighth string. It's actually totally true. I was deep on the bench on this one.
But when you did get your hands on the script, were you like, oh, I get it. I get why like so many actors have wanted to be a part of this one.
Yeah, I think so. I think, there's something that feels throwback about it. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't really make movies like this that often anymore. And the scale of it, the fact that it was this, it is this action movie, but it's a character-driven piece, and that JC was doing it, and he's got very good taste, particularly in the editing room.
Right.
So, so I think it makes sense why people were really interested in diving into it, and it really deals with the special forces, I think, in a very understated but truthful way.
Yeah.
And I don't think you see a lot of movies that deal, with just like the actual. Because the real guys.
What happens to these guys? Yeah. Like, who are kind of used up and then spit out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, and done, it explores that in, in a non-cliched kind of way. Because that's how these guys were. I mean, it was really interesting because I have all my adolescent ideas of before coming into it about what these guys were like. And then actually meeting them, they were soft-spoken and incredibly humble. And this one guy, RJ Casey, was an incredible dude and still working down in South America. Still not sure exactly who he works for or what he does.
Right.
But, he looks like just like a surfer dude. He was like about my height, small build, really soft spoken. And the guy is like one of the most lethal people on the planet.
Right.
And so it's just amazing. Like, these people blend. And I remember him saying, like, the guys that are all like jacked up, those are guys that actually have the time to go to the gym. The real people that are out in the field, you know, they don't necessarily look like, you know, these kind of like muscle fitness models.
Right. This might be the most testosterone heavy film since going back to our mutual youth's Predator. I think I always think of Predator when I think of like the like, because I always hear, I don't know, have you
heard Dudes in the Jungle?
Well, also those famous stories, like, I don't know if you've heard them, like the, of like of Arnold and Carl Weathers like at the gym, like flexing and trying to like outlift each other. I want to imagine that it was the case for this one, but probably not.
No, I have videos of Garrett and Pedro singing Moana.
So different. In the gym, at least, or no? Just
While holding assault rifles.
Oh, God.
There's quite a bit of that.
Mindfuck. Okay. Yeah. Who is most at peace being shirtless all the time? Who wanted to just show off a little bit?
Well, it's a toss-up between Garrett and Charlie. Those guys.
Yeah, they put in the
like
time.
Like a bit of flesh. Like a bit of sunshine touching their flesh.
What was the initial moment when you saw the Phoenix tattoo on the back of Ben Affleck? Was it a hushed like reverence on set? Like, oh my God.
No, it was this really funny thing that we all had to go. We all had to basically go to a swim class because they needed to make sure that we wouldn't drown if we just like touched the water.
Yeah.
Basically, we all had floaties on, and they're like, they kind of put it like it was training, but it was really just like go jump in the ocean and just prove that you won't die.
Right.
And so that was what we did. So yeah, that's when, you know, we all kind of those, I guess
the paparazzi.
Yeah, somebody on the team tipped them, I think. But but yeah, it was an impressive thing to behold.
Do you have any tattoos?
I don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you seen any tattoos of yourself by now on other people's bodies?
I did. Someone sent me a picture of a Poe Dameron tattoo.
There must be.
Yeah.
There must be.
Yeah, it was impressive.
That's half the reason to do Star Wars, is to know that you've defaced someone's body for all eternity.
Exactly.
You've been a part of a really horrible choice of somebody else.
No. I will live for maybe about 20 years, maybe about 10 years until it starts to melt and look
So we're talking about like how like this script like pops off the page and like is like kind of a no-brainer. What percentage of scripts that you get like are actually really this good? Like what's the batting average of the stuff that you see?
Well, it's a tough thing because it's like sometimes what reads really great isn't necessarily what's going to make a great movie either.
Sure.
You know, I think it was Willem Dafoe actually who I was talking to, and he was, you know, asking like, how do you choose stuff? Because it's going to be so difficult, and you can read something that's great, you know, that's really great, but then maybe if the director isn't really proven, like, what do you do? Do you side with the director? And he's like, for him, it's really just like, does it have the space? Not even the character or the dialogue or any of that, but like, does it have the space to create, to really explore something and create something and have the situation that allows for
creativity.
Something strange and special to occur, as opposed to just like, you know, these guys say really cool things and then this happens and then this happens and then this happens. Those are all really exciting things, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's really coming from a performer, as opposed to obviously a director.
Yeah, 'cause you're not a trained monkey that just wants to like go out there and just do the lines. Like,
yeah. You know, but sure. But also, you know, like, whereas a director clearly has to have a bit more of a sense of, I think, of the whole scope of the thing and the whole tone. And it's difficult for me 'cause I kind of came from a place originally where I thought I was going to be, or, you know, it's still possible, but I was interested in directing. And so I do tend to kind of see things in the bigger picture, and it takes some unlearning to be able to be like, I don't know what's happening. I'm just here. And, you know,
right. Well, luckily you're also putting your fate in the hands. Like if you look at the filmmakers you in particular the last 5 or 6 years have been able to work with, it's like, if there is some space in the margins, trust the filmmakers you're with to help fill those in.
Yeah, for sure. And with JC, you know, it's like the script was this one for Triple Frontier. It you know, no brainer to a certain extent because there was interesting things, but also it was very challenging because, you know, there is not a ton of dialogue or backstory that you get to see about these guys. So there was an element of like, well, how do you show who these people, how do you not make them anonymous? Like that didn't necessarily just jump out of the page. And so a lot of that is trusting JC and particularly trusting him in the edit.
Yes.
And I think that's where he really shines a lot, which is like, you know, you can feel, you can trust that you can try a bunch of stuff and things can might not go great when you're shooting during production. You know, there was definitely a lot of like wrestling with ideas and things, but in the edit, he sticks with it and he stays at it and he, you know, he's relentless.
I like that. Have you noticed that you probably were aware on the set, even like this is part of like the shared J.C. Chandor cinematic universe? That there are like references to the oil company from Most Violent Year.
I know. That was, I gotta say, that was me. I was like, come on, can I wear the standard hat? And then he started thinking, he's like, yeah, maybe. And then he's like, it's too much. But Pedro can wear it.
Just enough.
Like, all right, okay, all right.
Okay, so going back, since the luxury of this kind of conversation is we can go back a little bit. So born in Guatemala, raised in Miami. I'm curious, like, you know, your dad, a doctor, sister, I believe a scientist, mm-hmm. right? So like who in the family or friends or family was the biggest influence on you in terms of the arts growing up? Who introduced you to films?
Well, my grandmother, my mom's mom, was a singer in Guatemala and she had records and everything, but she gave all that up to have kids and to, you know, do what she was expected to do at that time in that place.
Sure.
My mom would tell horror stories of like her and her sisters, like just like finding her records and like just destroying them and like playing with them and breaking them and scratching. And she just was like, it's fine. So I'm just like, oh my God, how could we not have that? But really it's my father. My father, was a musician as well. He was, you know, always playing guitar. He was in bands. He would record music and write music all the time. He was a stereophile, and so it was like constant new component stereo pieces coming into the house. Suddenly we'd be like, what the hell is that? It's like, that's a speaker. We're like, really?
there goes your toys. We don't have room for that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So he was really into that for a long time. I'm afraid to say that I have inherited this quality lately. That's what I did with my first few paychecks. Is keep
gotta get the AV equipment up to stuff.
That's right. That's right. What are the cables? Gotta get the latest cables.
And if we run this over here, I'm in full surround sound.
Exactly. And then he also would make movies with his brothers. He had like a Super 8, and he would like make movies with his brothers, and then we got a video camera, and so we would make movies together, and then I started taking my dad's video camera and making movies with my friends. And so that really was it. And both my mother and father never once were like, you need to do this, or you should pay more attention to that. They just were like, you
that's
know,
all you need. Yeah, you just write some encouragement and freedom.
Yeah.
So you like me, a child of the 80s, bigger influence, Pacino or Van Damme growing up?
Equal. Really? Yeah, Van Damme, I got to say, was first love.
Okay.
Yeah, first love.
That could have been one of his films, first love.
I remember.
Double love. It would have been.
Yeah.
Well, let's peak Van Damme for you.
I remember really getting close and trying often to do the straddle. I had to do it with like a pole, so it was kind of like a pole dance, really. But I really was intent on.
For those that can't see Oscar right now, he's actually doing the splits
just
on my desk.
That's pretty good, right?
Oh God,
that's pretty good. Oh, I can't get up.
Here, let me help you. Okay, he's back.
What's that smell?
Something came out. What were we saying? Peak Van Damme. Double Impact, Bloodsport.
I think Bloodsport, Cyborg is always going to really, it always is going to have a special place. But say Bloodsport, Cyborg, and Kickboxer, those three were.
Late by that era standards. I always like Time Cop. I feel like Time Cop's an actual decent movie.
Yeah.
It has a decent director. Peter Hyams is an actually decent filmmaker.
I know. I think at that point, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out, and I kind of became more of that kind of guy.
Right. Sam Rockwell in Teenage Mutant Ninja
Turtles. I know.
Fun fact.
I know.
Is this... Things haven't changed. It's still pure Rockwell.
Winston's or I forget what it's like. Oh man.
Amazing. So when do the filmmaking tastes kind of mature? When do you kind of go to the Dog Day Afternoons, the Lumets?
Dog Day. Well, see, my dad would always bring, like, I remember it was so exciting because every Friday night he'd come home with like a new brown case from the video store. Mm. And we had a Betamax, and that's like, it was like Karate Kid, Never Ending Story. Yeah. And then, you know, and then I was like Deer Hunter. And,
right, he made a real quick jump.
Yeah, really fast jump. So that kind of started, I'd say like 11, 12.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But Dad was
that sweet spot of like seeing the movies that you're just a couple years too young to actually see that will impact slash scar you for life.
Yeah. Yeah. And the first, I think the first one that really was like, oh my God, you know, I Legend was the one that kind of made me really get excited about acting because I realized that the same actor that was the devil was also the butler in Clue. Right. And that realization was like, it was staggering. Like it blew my little kid mind, you know?
And later you wore the exact same prosthetics in X-Men Apocalypse.
Exactly. Exactly. The exact same one.
I mean, kind of.
Yeah, I know. It was wild. It was wild. And I started like reading about how he'd have to be in this bath of like, of whatever it was to get all the glue off. It sounded awful, awful.
And indeed, from what I gather, X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Similarly traumatic. It was brutal.
But anyway, so yeah, and then it was The Mission. I think The Mission became like my first like real serious, boring, favorite movie.
But great music.
No, it's fantastic. Ennio Morricone is that soundtrack's incredible, and it's still one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, you know? Beautiful. Okay, so jumping ahead.
And then Dog Day Afternoon, which I was a little older. I was like 17.
Got it.
Okay. And then that hit me, and it has stayed as the perfect. It's just perfect in every way.
Yeah, it's on that short list. Yeah. Okay, so jumping ahead. So you, you're acting in high school before you get to Juilliard, or you have to do a little bit? Juilliard is not something that just happens out of nowhere.
Yeah. I was acting like fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, doing like school plays. And then high school acting when I was a freshman, but then had a falling out with a drama teacher. And
what's the big disagreement when you're?
I was gonna do a play, and then I decided not to do it for a number of reasons. And then I think she just got pissed off and thought, like, who are you? You can't just, like, pass, you know, after you said you do, you know, it's like people depend on you and blah, blah, blah. And then, I was being a little bit of a punk kid and whatever. So I didn't want to do it. And then I kind of stopped, you know, like going to the auditions and stopped getting cast. And that's when I went into more bands and I was like into music.
Right.
But me and my buddy Jay, who is now has been my like assistant forever. Like he comes to all the movies with me and me and him. Made tons of movies. And there used to be like the video announcements. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you had that too, like video announcements. Yeah. And you're like, yeah.
They didn't keep me in the basement the entire time.
Yeah. and we would do the commercials or like the coming attractions for the school play.
Nice.
And oftentimes they had nothing to do with the play and they were like weirdly violent. And oftentimes they were like, we're not playing this on the announcements. You've got someone being beaten in a closet.
I don't know what you were going for. Congratulations on exploring whatever it is you're exploring. Yeah. Not for the rest of the school.
Exactly. Yeah. So tons of movies there. Yeah. And then I started auditioning in Miami as well. For like actual pro stuff.
Is that when you got the coveted role of Detective Fartman?
Yeah, that was shortly before Juilliard. Before even that, I had a featured extra part in The Crew.
Oh, I don't remember The Crew.
Burt Reynolds, Richard Dreyfuss.
This has slipped by me. I apologize.
Seymour Cassell.
Nice cast. Okay.
Yeah. Who else? Loggia? No. Was it Logie in it? I can't remember.
Okay, you just glossing right by Detective Fartman. Interesting. And going to the wrong
motion. I was on my way to Fartman. That's where.
You know, have you scrubbed the internet? Because I cannot find any video from that film.
Really? Lenny the Wonder Dog?
Lenny the Wonder Dog. Nothing.
Yeah, no. I remember, and I was in college, and my roommate brought it home to watch. Much to my horror. I was damn good at it.
Well, I mean, the secret weapon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so Juilliard, I've talked to many actors about Juilliard, infamously a tough road for many people. They kind of break you down. It's kind of just part of how it is. Mm-hmm. So who was your crew? Chastain was part of the group?
Yeah, she was in her third year when I was in my first year, when I first came in.
Was she obviously like had the goods? Was she
Of course. I mean, like apart from being like staggeringly, you know, just like luminescent.
Yep.
She was incredible. Everybody knew it.
Yeah.
Who else?
Is Mackie your age group?
Mackie had graduated already.
Okay.
I mean, it's
you could still hear his screams though,
for sure. But no, in my class, you know, there was great people: Rutina Wesley
She's on True Blood, right?
Yeah. Jessica Collins, and no, I mean, there was it was really intense, but beautiful for me. I really, really loved it. And I think because I got there and I was a little older, a lot of the psychological games and those kind of things, they were able to roll off my back kind of easily.
You had already been beaten down a little bit by life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Life had already stripped away all of that, you know, innocence.
Idealism. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And idealism. So I was able to kind of take that stuff with a grain of salt.
So coming out of Juilliard, it seems like you did a bunch of plays. I noticed one really early review. This is Two Gentlemen of Verona from Variety. Mm. Do you remember this?
Yeah. I remember, I'll say this.
Yeah.
I remember I was like, I'm not reading reviews to my family. I was like, I don't want to hear the reviews. I don't want to know the reviews. And my uncle, I remember, called me the next morning. He's like, I know you're not reading reviews. I just want to say, I looked up the word impish and it's not that bad.
this one doesn't cite impish. It's got a little bit of everything.
And then before that, the last one was like, I was walking out. I was walking after one of the shows, and one of the ushers came up and he's like, "Hey, we watch your. All the ushers are working here. We really love what you're doing. It's so good, and we all kind of sit down and watch it every night." I was like, "Oh wow, thank you." He's like, "Yeah, man, don't listen to what the Village Voice has to say."
It's like, I don't care what everybody's saying. We like it. Yeah. Yeah, Variety said, recent Juilliard grad Isaac is suitably sly, the opportunistic, and morally proteus, but his vocals could be stronger, and he plays the double-crossing cad a touch too fey.
Touch too fey.
Wow.
That would not fly in the current climate. No. You know?
Just fey enough, I said.
Give me more fey.
Okay, so we don't have the kind of time to talk about everything, but in the years before Llewyn Davis, you're working with some amazing filmmakers. I mean, you work with Ridley Scott a couple times, speaking of legend, Catherine Hardwick.
Yeah, Ridley gave me my first big shot.
So yeah, I was going to say, which of those films felt like, oh shit, like this is a big transition? Is it Body of Lies or Robin Hood? Which one are you talking about?
Body of Lies came first, but no, it was Robin Hood because... Yeah. Because of the role, because it was King John, because it wasn't, you know, the sixth ethnic guy in the cast. You know, it was like, it just with the amount of trust that he had in me as someone that I wasn't English, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That we did Body of Lies, and from that he could see me as King John was just like, I couldn't believe it. It was so incredible, and really have so much affection for him.
Yeah. What's you're one of the few actors that's had the privilege of being directed by Madonna.
Yes.
What was that like? What's she like as a filmmaker?
She was on it, man. She was incredible. I remember there was this one scene we were doing at Sotheby's, because in the auction house, and she lined up all the extras. I mean, there were like, you know, 70, 80 people, and she would just go down the line with every single one and be like, "No, yes, this one, but we need to change this part of their costume." This, you know, it was incredible, the amount of detail. Also, I was like, we're not going to see all those people. It's like, aren't there other things that we should, you know? But it was just like her attention to detail was astounding, and to have the energy to do that, she was so energetic and really fun. And I felt like, I don't know, I was really rooting for her the whole time because it's just by the nature of who she is, there was already so much shit to have to get through, you know? It's like anybody else that was directing the same movie or made the exact same choices, you know, it's like would obviously be looked at so differently.
Yeah. So in that period of time, again, you're working with some really talented filmmakers, obviously. You're more than a jobbing actor. Like, things are going really well. Before Llewyn Davis, what was there like a moment where it felt like it was about to shift in a big way, or was Llewyn the first kind of real opportunity in that way to raise your profile? You felt
that Llewyn was the first one. Yeah. No, there wasn't. I mean, if there was, I wasn't aware of it or couldn't feel it at all. I mean, I remember auditioning for it and then just like screaming to the heavens, "Give me this, please, please give me this one, give it to me." I mean, I tried so hard on that one. I did everything that I possibly could. And luckily that worked out. But yeah, that changed everything.
It's an amazing film. They're pound for pound my favorite filmmakers virtually working today in the last 30 years. And that's one of their better ones. So that's pretty good. But I mean, one thing I love is
that also flew under the radar to a certain extent as well.
It did. And frankly, for me too, even like, I feel like I, like many of their films, I've appreciated it more the more times I've seen it. Mm-hmm. But what I love about them too is like some of their best films, like they can and are more than willing to like cast someone that is a kind of a relative unknown. You think of like A Serious Man, another one of my favorite films.
Right. Michael Stuhlbarg and
Tim Blake Nelson and their films. Like, they can get away with that because it's, it's sold as a Coen Brothers movie and they do it on a budget and it just all works.
Exactly. And it's part of the reason why I think some of those stories can work so incredibly well. I mean, Josh Brolin, you know, had done a lot of stuff, but really that was like so massive, you know, and I think that's what's also so beautiful about them. They're real folk artists.
Yeah.
American folk artists.
What's what's the biggest difference now, having worked on many different kind of film sets, but from a Coen Brothers set versus others, would you say?
I think just how chill it is.
Yeah.
It was so... And I think even for them, it had a particular chill to it. You know, we were just... there was a gentleness to the way everything was happening. There was a cohesiveness. There was fun. You know, there was it was about, you know, it in between takes, you know, we were just talking about all sorts of different things. It was like a crash course in aesthetics, you know, like Joel would just talk to me about like, you know, sculptors to go check out and this thing to, and not in a highbrow way, just like as a bud, you know, as a friend, just saying like, I think you might find this interesting, you know? So that for me was just, really, really incredible. And shooting in New York and shooting in those incredibly kind of curated environments that the production design did. I don't know. There was, and there was just no bullshit, you know, like they wouldn't, and I remember it was difficult at first, but there wasn't like lots of compliments, you know?
Right.
There wasn't lots of like, how was that? That was good. Let's try another. There wasn't
all the BS that usually goes on a set of like got to pump each other up.
And... Yeah. There was none of that. And you'd think for me, it's like it was my first lead role.
Yeah.
And, you know, that it'd be like, so more or less how, you know, and I just could already tell from the get-go, I was like, that's going to be a waste of time.
Right.
So it felt like everybody was just kind of like throwing in their stuff and we were all trying to build this thing together and that was it. And there wasn't really time to like worry about our feelings and, you know, confidence building and all those things.
Again, all the BS.
And it's funny how quickly then you regress when you're not in that environment, you know?
Was it good? So, okay, so in post Llewyn Davis, again, a bunch of great opportunities come around. You work with Alex Garland a few times.
Yeah.
And in
another guy who's that feeling is very similar as well.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Again, I've interviewed him a few times. Also, I would say no BS with him. Yeah. He's just all business
cuts in the
best
to the
way.
Quick.
The Star Wars opportunity comes up. At what point in that process did it shift from the Janet Leigh psycho thing where, like, we think we've got our hero, Poe Dameron, and then we're going to kill him off halfway through into we're going to keep you around? Like, was there a script that you read where, like, you bought it where Poe died?
I read Poe's scenes on JJ's iPhone in a cafe in Paris at, like, midnight.
Just, like, pure Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Just like.
That's the absolute truth, too. Like, I went for the meeting. They kind of told me the story and then told me that he dies spectacularly. And not even halfway through. It's like that's kind of sets up the whole movie.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, okay. And they could see that I was a little bit disappointed by that.
But then he comes back. Then you find out.
Yeah. Well, then, but he didn't come back. And then, you know, JJ was like, well, you want to meet up a little later? And that's when we met up in this cafe. And I remember just like sitting across from him, just reading on his iPhone. It was so surreal. And then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to think about it. And he's like, people are going to write novels about this character. Trust me, people are going to, you know, which is true. They have comic books and stuff. And, but this was even back then before he was going to kind of.
There will be a streaming service one day and a spinoff series.
It's true. He forecasted it all. And then I remember I went back home and I was like, what am I talking? Of course I'm going to do this. It doesn't matter. And so I called him to be like, hey, I want to do this. And he said, okay, also, he's going to live through the whole thing. We've changed it. It's going to be awesome. I was like, oh my God, that's incredible. He's like, stay tuned. And then I got, hey, do you have any pictures of you looking young and heroic? And I was like, yeah, I think I could find something. And then I said, he's like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Perfect. And it's like, all right, cool, cool, cool. And it's like, so you're going to have to come out and audition. I remember, I was like, oh, damn. He's like, well, Kez, now I live. Now they're like, okay, so now this is someone that we're going to have to deal with for a few movies. So now we have to make sure that it's not, you know. And then I remember being like, huh. And then my buddy Jay, he was like, hey, if you want the job, sometimes you got to fill out the application.
You got your own Lebowski in your life. That's like,
you're right, Jay. And so I flew out there and I met John. Is the first person I met, and like he came back in the dressing room and he and I just like went over the scene together, like back to back doing it. and immediately just kind of fell in love with each other. And then went out there, did the audition, stood next to John, stood next to Daisy, and then JJ literally came over and was like, I don't know why we did this. Of course you've got this part. You've got the part, you know? And then like within a couple hours, I found out that I had the part.
Classic.
So yeah, but it's funny. It just shows you how it goes.
What did you make? I've talked to a bunch of people, including your buddy Donald, has been in here a few times. I loved Last Jedi. I truly did. I'm such a big defender of that one. And I know for whatever reason, there's been a lot of debate about the humor and other things. But with respect to your character, there's like the think pieces of like Poe represents toxic masculinity and mansplaining in Last Jedi. Did that surprise you? And what's your take on that kind of interpretation?
No, at this point, it doesn't surprise me. Just knowing the kind of culture that we live in and the platform for everyone showing their buttholes. I mean, their opinions.
You just said something else. I think.
Sorry. No. but it is it's that kind of thing where it's what you want. I think you want the conversation to go on and on and on and on. And in a way, if everybody agrees on everything, then there's not going to be much of a conversation, I don't think. And so I think that for me, that you can extrapolate very important things about that are happening now in our culture that should be talked about from maybe your disgust at something in a movie or you're wanting to defend a film. I mean, I think that's the idea.
Yeah.
So I had no problem with that.
You get the script for episode 9, which you've now wrapped. Do you go straight to the Poe parts, the Poe lines? Are you thumbing through it? Like, what's my part in this? Or do you read through the whole thing?
No, I read through the first time through, I read through the whole thing because also you need to know the context of when's Poe getting shown? Like, what's the build up? When is he not? That kind of thing. And then I count all the lines.
For the record, 82. Respectable.
I was very psyched when I read it.
As a fan, you've talked about this before. I mean, you grew up a Star Wars fan. This is a meaningful franchise for you. This is one of the things, like the end of Game of Thrones and the end of all these things, Sopranos, where it's like, can it possibly live up to our expectation of the end of this 9-part saga?
Yeah.
It did for you, the experience of reading it?
The experience of reading it definitely did. And the experience of doing it, it's amazing how adaptable we are because the most crazy scenarios and situations can feel routine after a while. Right. So even like, gotta get on the freaking X-Wing again, here we go. Gotta squeeze myself into this freaking Falcon chair. It's like, why do they clearly do not make it for ethnic hips.
Not ergonomic in any way.
Harrison Ford did not have a butt because this is not working for me. So it's like, everything, you just start to kind of, everything starts to feel like old hat. And the fact that towards the end of shooting, and when we were saying goodbye, it's very emotional for me. It was such a huge chapter of my life, even just 6 years or whatever that was. Just it was a lot, and the intensity of it, and the. Yeah, I mean, it's like the biggest films ever. And so, being in the mix of that, in the midst of all that was a lot. And so it was. And to have JJ come back and the energy of the set and the energy of the whole thing was so distinct from the other ones in a great, great way.
I know I'm not going to try and dig for anything like real, but I do know like they showed some like footage to like, I think, shareholders or something. My sense is that we actually get to see you and Daisy interact. I mean, we obviously got a snippet of it in the last one. Does that keep it fresh and interesting? You're getting to interact finally with Daisy.
Yeah, I think the idea that, we were apart in the, obviously in the first one, we never really meet, I guess, until the very end. And then, in the second one, we were all in our own adventures.
Right.
And in this one, it's great because we get to have some stuff together.
Yeah, amazing. Another thing that you can't really talk about because you haven't even shot yet, but let's return to Dune for a second, just because I'm massively interested in this, just both on the Dune level and the Denis Villeneuve level, who's obviously as talented as we've got right now. I don't know. What can you say about this one? In terms of working with this cast, I love Chalamet, Rebecca Ferguson, Bautista, and Brolin.
Yeah. Javier Bardem.
Yeah. So that's pretty good. So what's going to separate it, you think, from the Lynch interpretation? When I talked to Timothy, he said it's surprisingly grounded.
Yeah. It's It's a dangerous word. It's simple, but it's not that it's simple. It's just been, it's focused. Mm. You know, there's a real focus to the thing.
Right.
Because it can spiral into, I mean,
there's a lot there.
As much as I want to see Jodorowsky's movie,
yeah,
one day. But yeah, because it's inspired so many things. You know, I mean, you read the book and you're like, wow, I've seen a lot of this stuff, and you realize it's because everything pilfered from this incredible novel, series of novels. So yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't want to get into specifics about what happens because I think it's going to be very exciting for people to see and not really know the approach. Wow, that's big small.
The saga of Oscar's coffee has come to an end. We got you some caffeine.
That's not a flat white.
he's about to throw it in my face, guys.
I really have the urge to dunk the mic into the coffee.
Please don't. Please don't. Home stretch.
Anyway.
I'm watching a man unravel before my eyes.
Yes, Dune. It's really fun, and I'm really excited.
Always have a flat white ready for Oscar Isaac in the future.
It's new, this whole flat white thing. It's like the English...
Is it new for you, or just a new drink?
No, in the United States.
Right.
Like, even the fact that they're like, what size flat white you have? You're like, idiots. What size?
You spent a lot of time in England, clearly.
A lot of time.
The Brooklyn Inn has gone way out of...
I don't know. I don't want to say much of anything. I just want to say that it's like it's got Denny's aesthetics, his sensibility. It's the visuals just from like the lookbooks that I've seen are astounding.
Sure.
So beautiful, and the story I think is one that takes. Takes so much of the novel and focuses it into something that's just incredibly impactful.
Right. I mean, and not to put words in your mouth, but from what my conversation with Denis and others is, it sounds like it's not the whole book. It's like, I think, at least half the book or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea is that it'll hopefully spawn more entertainment.
more content in 2020 and beyond.
Exactly.
I couldn't be more excited. Permanently scarred by the X-Men Apocalypse experience? Will you ever do another comic book movie again?
No. It makes it seem... I was talking about that specific element of it.
There were good aspects, but it was the makeup stuff.
The makeup was incredibly challenging and way, way more than I had anticipated it was going to be.
Did they lie to you, or did you just not listen?
No, I think I saw the drawings of the thing, and it looked great, and I met the guys, and the guys are incredible that did the makeup. Ryan and Alexi, I was with them every day, and that was a really interesting collaboration with these guys because it was so much of like it was just us all the time, and they were like my pit crew, and then like working with those guys and me loving the character of Apocalypse and for better or worse trying to imbue it with what I thought was fascinating when I would read the comic books about Apocalypse, because growing up. Evangelical and
yes, the zealotry
and my sister and I were just talking today about like we had there was like charts in our house of like end of times, like this is when the beast will come, this is when this will happen, and so she went into climate change and she's like, I went to science because it was like rooted in reality, and she's like, and now it's the end of the world that I'm dealing with. And so like the end of times was like, it's like definitely imprinted on us. So for me, I was very interested in what Apocalypse represents, making it more than just like, at the time it was a cool, scary name, but actually connecting it to, all right, it's the revelation. Apocalypse doesn't mean destruction. It actually means like the pulling back the curtain to reveal things.
Yes.
And so the revealing of stuff and him getting his horsemen and the plagues and that whole thing. I was really interested in those elements and seeing if there was a way to kind of imbue the character and the tone with a bit of the feeling that I get when I think about Revelations. So that's, those parts were exciting. Yeah. But the practical effects aspect was just way more than I could have anticipated. And, I think we probably could have gotten a lot of mileage if we went for the good old ones and zeros.
How much do you resent that your old buddy Chastain's doing an X-Men movie and apparently just threw on a wig?
I know. I was like, what the crap, man? She learned from, I paved the way. I died for our sins.
Speaking of comic book movies, people have mentioned fan casted you as Batman. What do you think?
That was cool to see. Yeah.
It's not a bad character to be associated with.
Yep.
Matt Reeves is a pretty amazingly talented director.
Haven't gotten the call. Have not, as much as the fans have tried.
Okay.
No dice.
That being said, you are trying to manifest Secret into the Universe, apparently video game movies, Metal Gear Solid. Is that something? Is that one of those things where you say something like on an interview and now like you've heard from people?
Yeah, I don't even know what Metal Gear Solid is. I was just talking shit.
That's not true.
I have no idea what these people are talking
about.
You're
lying. Didn't you say the actual character name?
Jay told me. Jay mentioned it right before and I just said it.
You're too good an actor. I don't know if I'm to believe you or not.
I don't play these games. I'm a grown-ass man.
Okay, I definitely don't believe you.
I really like Metal Gear Solid a lot. I played the last one so much. It was a Phantom Thread, right?
Yeah, you're beyond me now, and that's saying something.
Anyway, I do love that game, and okay. You know, I mean, it's an insane story. The story is crazy.
I don't honestly know much of anything.
It actually gives me a similar feeling of reading the Book of Revelation. It is. It's so wild, and like you know what Hideo Kojima does, the myth around the whole thing is just it's Lynchian. It is. Really? Like I could see it as like a David Lynchian type weird action bizarro thing. Obviously, like how you condense all of that wild imagery with this kind of special ops thing and into a screenplay of 2 hours, I don't know that would be a Herculean feat. But I think the right guy is at the helm. I've heard him talk about video games,
Jordan,
and yeah, Jordan seems really like the right guy to try to do that. I really liked Kong. I really liked what he did with that.
Yeah.
And I'll be curious to see if it can withstand the transfer.
Right.
Or inspire, at least inspire something that gives you the feeling of what it feels like to play the game.
Gotcha.
You know? The isolation of it to a certain extent and just the weird creepiness of it.
So you've had a little time off, which is a nice luxury. You're going to start to, I hear you're going to be at Celebration, Star Wars Celebration, maybe? Maybe. Okay.
Potentially.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know.
In theory, I'll see you there. You got Dune coming up. I mean, are you interested in producing more? I knew you did that for Operation Finale.
I am actually. Yeah. I'm on the brink of starting my company and nice. Definitely got a lot of things, you know, a lot of ideas that are percolating, and through the years I've made some good friendships with people and it's just nice to be able to talk with other people about making stuff. It's not always about waiting and hoping that, you know, that perfect thing lands in your lap.
I'm going to stick it out here in New York, I hope.
Yeah. No, we're here. We just moved down to Borm Hill.
Lovely. Mm-hmm. So you never moved to LA. You never had to.
No. I was there like 2 months, I think it was, when I first finished school.
Yeah.
We were out there for pirate season. And
pirate or pilot?
Pirate
same
season. I stole that from Betty Gilpin, by the way.
Is that true?
Yeah, she always calls it pirate season. It made me laugh so much.
Oh, yeah, she talked a bit about that here, too. Yeah. Amazing. And we haven't even talked much about, and I'll let you go in a second, but like the music side of things, which is obviously a huge part of your life, too. I know you were just singing some Llewyn Davis songs the other night. I love that that's still part of your repertoire.
I did, yeah. It was an American Songbook. They invited me to come over to Lincoln Center. It was the Time Warner Building, actually, and an incredible space.
Yeah.
And I did an hour and a half set.
That's so cool.
It was mostly originals, and then I did a few of the Llewyn Davis songs and a couple other ones.
I love it.
Yeah, it was just amazing.
Is there a conscious effort to keep those things separate at this point, or are you open to kind of exploring in film again, like a movie musical or that kind of thing, or does it feel right to kind of keep them separate in a way as pursuits?
No, I'm not intentionally keeping it separate. I mean, obviously making my own music and performing it, that's just a different thing than to like doing it in a movie.
Right.
You know, it has to be about like the story and that whole thing. Actually just like writing, you know, playing my songs and working on that and getting a band together and performing them for people is a very different thing anyway.
Right.
But I'm open, definitely open to seeing it. And I mean, people seem to be into that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're really opening up the career today.
Yeah.
More musical opportunities. You've become Batman. You're Solid Snake. There's so much going on thanks to me. You're welcome,
Thank
Oscar.
Thank you, man. I can't wait for the Solid Snake musical.
If only I could get you a fucking flat light.
God damn it.
Oscar, you're always welcome here. Now that I know that you're spending time here, next step, this is part of the evolution of the Josh Horowitz experience. We're going to have to do something comedic soon. Your buddies have all done it. Donald's done it. Chastain's done it.
What do you mean something comedic?
My after-hours series in Comedy Central. You're so ignorant. I make brilliant comedy, Oscar, and you are going to be a part of it.
Great.
Oh, fuck. Suddenly you turned into a really bad actor. Wait, he's leaving. It's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you too, bud. Really good to see you.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.
'Tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.